Charles Fogarty, in Massachusetts, there's been a sharp rise in reports of elder abuse, and much of that is related to the opioid addiction epidemic, adult children abusing their parents' finances, etc. Do you have concerns about a similar problem in Rhode Island?
We do. The demographics are similar but not identical in Rhode Island. One of the things that we don't have that they do is the data that we collect is not as detailed. Our information system is quite frankly old, and hopefully over time we'll be able to replace that. But anecdotally, yes, we're seeing that due to a variety of things, the economy, while coming back, still not vigorous. The addiction issues here in Rhode Island are as serious as they are in Massachusetts. And that, can become a stressful situation for families. And when that occurs, vulnerable people in the family often get abused. When I first came here to DEA a year ago, I had the chance to meet with our Adult Protective Services people and talk to them about some of the challenges they face going out and some of the issues to get kind of a real life story behind the numbers and statistics.
And those are the people who investigate
They do.
cases of abuse.
And I'll never forget one of the people told me about a case where there was a grandson who was a substance abuser, who he was not physically abusing the grandmother, but clearly mentally abusing her, taking money from her and so forth. And the woman did not want to press charges. Number one, it's her grandson. She loves him, obviously, and no matter what they do, you never stop loving them. But secondly, and this was the one that really got to me, was she said, "I don't want to be alone." And she said, "I'd rather be abused than be alone." So even though she knew that it wasn't right, that her grandson had problems, and that she was being victimized, it was not only for love of him, but she just didn't want to be alone. She'd rather have somebody in that house, even if that person wasn't nice to her, than not, and didn't want to file a charge. And I suspect there's more of that than we would imagine. And if people are shamed or afraid to report abuse, I think in Rhode Island, quite frankly, there's an underreporting of senior abuse. And we have to do, I think, a better job of educating people. We work very closely with first responders, police officers, and others, and they're wonderful. But with family members and others to educate them about what the signs are and how they can get help in there. We also have an early intervention program where if we go out and we see that it doesn't rise to the level officially of abuse, but there may be some potential there, we then try to intervene with some services and help. The laws that we have right now allow us to investigate, make recommendations, and certainly if there's something egregious, we notify the authorities and they take action. But we always emphasize to people if this is something, a life or death threatening situation, immediately call the police right away. Our folks will certainly go out and triage it, but we don't have the ability to forcibly remove somebody from there or even forcibly enter if the person doesn't want us to come in there. Adults have rights, even if the decisions they make may be something you or I don't think makes sense.
Seniors, adults have rights, and yet seniors are perhaps more vulnerable than other populations for a variety of reasons. For example, they're more likely to be prescribed painkillers and to have that medication at home, and that makes them vulnerable, to theft or being taken advantage of. And you described a few of these efforts, but tell me a little bit more about how you're reaching out to this group to let them know the protections that are available to them.
Well, our unit, again, we are a small division, but a third of our staff of 31, so 11, are assigned to Adult Protective Services. So they go out and investigate. They work with community groups and organizations. They work with other social agencies with respect to referrals, getting that information out to the provider network, social workers, hospital individuals, and so forth. Helping to educate, let them know the warning signs, what are the resources, where can they turn, and so forth. That's a big part of the effort. We want to improve upon that in terms of additional trainings and so forth. I think that's going to be one of the keys, is helping to educate the community that's out there on the front line that sees this in some capacity, the signs to look out for, what they need to do, the resources they can turn to, and where they can provide help to that person, and maybe counsel them, saying, are you concerned about this for your health or safety? So that, those are legitimate issues. Seniors, again, as you point out, feel vulnerable, and some of them don't want to do it out of shame because the national studies show that 90% of the people who abuse seniors, either physically or financially or sexually, are family members. And I mean, think of that. I mean, that, our family who we love and we feel closest to, if they're the ones taking advantage of it, there are people that will just don't want to admit that. And that is, you know, that's tragic. So we have to be aware of these circumstances and provide a safe environment where they can feel comfortable, because no senior under any circumstances should be abused, whether it's physical abuse, sexual abuse, or financial. And financial is becoming more and more prevalent, especially with the economy having been in the dumps the way it has been for the last few years. While it is improving, you know, seniors get taken advantage of financially from members of the family who may have been laid off, who may themselves have substance abuse issues. So all of these things are related, and they have an impact on older Rhode Islanders.
Let's talk about financial abuse a little bit. As you mentioned, you know, people with substance abuse disorders may turn to stealing to get the money they need to buy drugs. What makes seniors particularly vulnerable to this kind of abuse, to financial abuse?
I think a couple of things. Number one, we talked about the family issue, that even though you know it's wrong, if it's a family member, you're reluctant to do it because you don't want to hurt or embarrass them. Or in the case, you don't want them to leave you alone.
You don't want to do it, meaning you don't want to turn them in or say something to the authorities.
You don't want to turn them in because it's your family member, and, you know, unless it gets too bad, sometimes you're going to just let it go on. It's that reluctance. I don't want to be the one to turn my son or my daughter or my grandson in. I think secondly, in many cases, it might be folks who come in as caregivers. Most of them are very good, but there are some who will take advantage of the situation. And again, you put yourself in the position. This is the person who takes care of me, allows me to stay here. If I report something, what will happen to me at that point? Will they go away, or, you know, will they take it out on me? So there's these concerns that seniors have about that as well. So we want to try to let them know, look, you deserve to be respected. You deserve to have a good quality of life and be independent. And there are support services out there that we want to help you with. So don't be afraid. Don't live a life of misery when you don't have to. And we want people to know that there are places they can turn to.
Charles Fogarty directs the Division of Elderly Affairs for the state of Rhode Island. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Kristen. Pleasure to be here.